We're in the middle of this series on the heart of a disciple. And the key premise for the whole series is there's a big difference between being saved and becoming a committed follower or disciple of the Lord Jesus Christ. And 269 times in the New Testament, the word disciple is used. Our passage that we've launched the whole series of comes from Matthew 4, verse 18, where Jesus, while walking by the Sea of Galilee, saw two brothers, Simon, who's called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, "Go to a Bible college and learn all about me." It's good to do that. Now, he just said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." And immediately they left their nets and followed him. And so at the very heart of it, there are three fundamental things. There's many other things that flow out of it, but three fundamental things that make a disciple of the Lord Jesus Christ. Number one, they follow him. Yeah, you can learn about him, Bible college, Bible studies, all that's brilliant, it's part of it. But ultimately, are you following Jesus to the best of your ability? The second thing is that disciples are transformed by Jesus, not by religious behavior, but an inner working of Christ dwelling in you. He says, "I'm going to make you into something. I'm going to shape your life." And then the third thing that a disciple is committed to is being committed to the mission of Jesus, to make other disciples. He says, "I'll make you fishers of men." And today we're going to talk about that a disciple is called to serve. And while we're going to talk a little bit, and by inference, I'm not going to repeat this the whole time, we're talking about serving in church life. That helps a lot when these teams are full and there's next level people coming through. But I'm also extending to how we serve in community, how we serve in our workplace, how we serve our next door neighbors, how we serve in our families. It's bigger than just what we do on a Sunday. And as followers of Jesus, he calls us to be radically countercultural. Let's look at, for example, in Mark's Gospel, chapter 10, and verse 42 and following. Jesus called them, that is, disciples, together and said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you." I just want that little phrase to sink in. He says that's what the Gentiles do. They use their position, they use their power for themselves. And we still see large parts of the world where that is still true. Maybe in Australia it's a bit more sophisticated, but it's still a little bit of that. In fact, the heart of democracy is actually based partly on this passage, that you don't exploit your position, but you use it to serve others. So he says, you see what the Gentiles are doing, the pagans are doing. Not so with you. Whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. And then this extraordinary statement. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. So Jesus says, I'm going to demonstrate, and I am demonstrating. You know that I could claim all sorts of things, but I haven't come doing that. I've come to serve, and ultimately to give everything that I have to ransom your life from the bondage and the destruction and the pain of sin. And so as we're talking about serving, we're going to drop into a parable that we could spend a long time on, but I'm just going to lift a few things out. And I would encourage you to actually reread the story again. It's one that has become part of language, the story of the Good Samaritan. And even if there's no faith connection to it, when somebody stops and helps somebody, they refer to it, they were a Good Samaritan. It's become so ingrained in our thinking. And the story of the Good Samaritan calls us to recognize at a high level a few things. Number one, the sacred worth of all people. The rivalry, the hatred between Jews and Samaritans, Samaritans, Jews is enormous. And Jesus plucks a Samaritan and puts him in the center of the story and makes him the hero. And so there's a whole lot of issues going on there about, do we just help people that we like who believe similar to us, or are our hearts bigger than that? The second thing, that there's great danger in just going through like a mechanical religion, because two of the people who just walk by have just come from the temple. They've just come from church. But it's not affected their heart. It's not impacted their lives. The third thing is, there's a need for us to be a blessing to others, to allow God to work through us, the blessing that we receive, that in some way, in some measure, we can pass it on. And finally, it's impossible, if you are living life looking for a loophole, to justify yourself and your actions before God. You see, Jesus tells this parable in response to a man who's trying to justify himself. He's living life looking for a loophole. He's engaged in a discussion with Jesus. He's asked some questions. Jesus says, well, what do you think the important thing is? And he says, well, you should love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and you should love your neighbor as yourself. That's a summary. Jesus said, that is a brilliant summary of the law and the prophets. And then the man, seeking to justify himself, goes, this has just got a little bit awkward. Who's my neighbor? And in response to that, self-justification, trying to pull himself back from who he has to help, he looks for a loophole, and Jesus tells the story. And I'm just going to read it. There once was a man traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho. And on the way, he was attacked by robbers. They took his clothes. They beat him up. And they went off, leaving him half dead. Luckily, I'm reading from the message, luckily, a priest was on his way down the same road. And when he saw him, he angled across to the other side. Then a Levite, also just come from church, a religious man showed up. He also avoided the injured man. A Samaritan traveling the road came to him. And when he saw the man's condition, his heart went out to him. He gave him first aid, disinfecting and bandaging his wounds. And then he lifted him on his donkey, led him to an inn, and made him comfortable. In the morning, he took out 2 silver coins and gave it to the innkeeper, saying, take good care of him. If it costs any more, put it on my bill, and I will pay you on my way back. Now it gets awkward. Jesus asks the question, what do you think? What do you think? Which of these three became a neighbor to the man attacked by robbers? Of course, the guy involved in this discussion with Jesus, the man trying to justify himself, has got nowhere to go with that except to answer the one who treated him kindly. The religion scholar responded, Jesus said, go and do the same. Go and do the same. There are 3 attitudes expressed by the key players that I just want to touch on. But obviously, I just want to reference the injured man, because sometimes we, that person, maybe not physically beaten up, but stuff that's happened in our lives, We are wounded, we are hurting, and we are in need of help. And it's all right to be that person sometimes. My own encouragement is don't turn it into a victim mentality. But that's another whole thing. But sometimes we are the one that is bleeding on the inside, maybe even some physical things, practical things, and we need help. And we should never pretend otherwise. But the three people that are key to this is obviously the priest, the Levite, and then the Samaritan. And they actually describe three key attitudes that people have towards life. First of all, there's the thieves. And I would say that's summed up by greediness. They're greedy. And their kind of attitude is what is yours is mine, and I'm going to take it. I don't care about where you're going. I don't care about your family. I don't care about if you've got more than enough or whatever the case. We are just going to take it off you. And most of us would say, well, I'm not a thief. I've never beaten anybody up and left them bleeding on the roadside in reality or metaphorically. But maybe it also comes down to a mindset where everywhere you go into a situation, your first thought is, what am I going to get out of this? Rather than, what can I give to this? And I'm not even talking about finance here. That could be an aspect of it. I'm just talking about, am I coming to give something or just to receive? And there's nothing wrong with the interaction of giving and receiving. But I'm talking about a mindset, well, I'm getting nothing out of this. Jesus said in Luke 12 and verse 15, watch out! Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life doesn't consist in the abundance of possessions. And it's just an interesting thought, all kinds of greed. He does tie it to material things, but I think there's other kinds of greed that can get us into the place where we're going, well, what am I getting out of this? Rather than, yeah, I'm getting something, and that's good, but can I give something? Can I contribute in some way? The second attitude is one of selfishness. What's mine's mine. I'm not going to steal anything from you, but I'm going to keep what's mine. And that is epitomized both by the priest and the Levite. It's interesting. I love the way Eugene Peterson kind of throws a little random thought. Luckily, a priest came along. And we're talking about an Old Testament priest in the days of Israel. They've just been in temple service. And a Levite who's just been there worshiping. Yeah, I wasn't that lucky. Because their attitude was, I don't want to get involved in this. I don't want to give anything that is mine to this. I'm not going to beat him up. Those terrible people who beat him up, somebody ought to do something about it. They saw it. And it's interesting that they saw and then crossed over to the other side, almost to pretend, haven't seen anything, nothing going on over there. And they keep on walking. And selfishness is something that I think is endemic in our society and springs easily from the human heart. Every single one of us at some other time have responded to situations selfishly where it's all about us and we see life and what's going on through that filter. And in Philippians 2 and verse 3, and it's in the context of Jesus coming to earth, emptying himself of all his deity, all the privileges of being God and becoming a servant and ultimately laying down his life for us. It's in that context that Paul says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourself. Now, it's not saying you shouldn't value yourself. It's just talking about when you come to a thing, come with a sense of humility. Not looking to your own interests, but each to the interests of others. And that's a really challenging verse. If you hold it up and measure every single one of your actions, your attitudes, your responses. I know I wouldn't pass the test every day and every moment of the day, and that's even before I've left the house. Come on, married couples, don't look at me like that. We all have our moments, you know. People sometimes ask Linda, so not so much anymore because you know us so well. So what's it like to be married to Sean? And it's almost like the picture is Sean comes home and there's angels singing. We gather little kiddies around and have a little Bible study, tell a parable and a truth, and nah, not much. In fact, whenever I'd open my Bible, Deborah would go, "We're moving, aren't we?" And that's a whole other thing. We won't go there. But there's a real challenge. Like, what are my motives in here? And we all struggle. We never get it right all the time or perfectly. But there's this challenge. Come on. Be other-centric, not just selfish. And then there's the Good Samaritan, incredibly generous. And it's almost with an attitude. What is mine is also yours, and I'm going to give it. I'm going to help. And it's, again, it's not an appeal to give everything away. But in Psalm 12 and verse 5, it says, good will come to those who are generous. And we can be generous in finance, but we can be generous in encouragement. We can be generous in putting our hands to work and helping out in a situation. Seeing something change. And what I love about the Good Samaritan story, because it's incredibly challenging. I mean, every time I read it, it's like, you know, bit of conviction, is that the Good Samaritan didn't do everything, but he did what he could. He continued on his business trip. He did what he could to bandage and help the guy. He got others involved to work with him at the inn. He said, I need help here. He said, look, here's some coin. I'm going to come back this way. And obviously, the innkeeper knew me. Maybe it was a common business trip that he was on. And he said, if I can do anything else, I will. So I love that Jesus doesn't say this guy suspended all of his life and just cared for this guy until he recovered. No, he did what he could. And what he could do was actually quite a lot. But I want to encourage all of us. It's not about trying to fix everything. It's about doing what we can. And it may start off as a small thing or a bigger thing. It depends on our resource, our capacity, the time. We've got all of those things factoring. But I believe all of us can do something somewhere to make a difference. Proverbs 11 and verse 25 says, a generous person will prosper, and whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. Isn't that a great promise, a great principle? Whoever refreshes others. And I love that thought of just refreshing somebody with an act of kindness, with a little bit of generosity, with doing something that you can. And it's this principle of sowing and reaping. So disciples are called to serve. The priest and the Levite saw a need and ignored it. In fact, did everything they could to pretend they hadn't seen it. And when the man who hears the story, he's trying to justify himself. He's trying to find a loophole. Jesus says, well, what do you think? Which of the three became a neighbor to the man attacked by robbers? Of course, I love the simplicity of the one who treated him kindly, the one who had some compassion, the one allowed his heart to be moved, his heart to be touched. Jesus says, go and do the same. I want to tell you a story, and I hope I can get through this. I am a bit of a sook sometimes. My mum's 91, and she's got a few mobility issues at that age. Still doing pretty well. Dad's 20 months younger, and doing pretty well, both of them. He turns 90 this year. And Mum's always volunteered and dragged Dad along, and he's great. He's got a generous heart. I'm not having her. But she's always, oh, let's get involved in that, let's do that, the things that she hasn't done. And COVID really hit them, and then this mobility issue came up. And I'm going to read a bit of her words to me on something. She said, "In advancing years, I no longer have the physical ability to help out at the op shop. When they moved to that, we were involved in South Africa. When they immigrated, they got involved in the op shop down the road that the Anglican Church run, brilliant one there. When they moved to Melbourne, immediately got involved, and mum's in the front talking to people, helping people. Dad's at the back fixing things, which is his happy place. But she said, I can't do that anymore. And the best I can do now is to dress dolls, clean them up, that are donated to the op shop. And there's a special fundraising thing that it goes to there. I enjoy making them look pretty. But knowing that in real terms, what I have to offer seems very meager. This left me sad. Until I received the following letter from a lady who over time had bought quite a few dolls, but I didn't know what happened to them. The letter reads, Dear Shirley, one of my family is in Europe working with refugees who are escaping war-torn areas, and particularly with traumatized children. Recently, she's been working with a precious little one who suffered terribly and isn't responding or wasn't responding to anything or anybody. She was unable to speak to this little girl and didn't want anybody to touch her in any comforting way at all. The person on the ground one night had a dream about the dolls and this little child playing a game and chatting away to them. So she took a doll to one of the sessions, and this is the field worker, started to nurse it, talk to it, kiss the doll, play games, you know, the whole thing that would be done. And the little girl didn't take her eyes away from the doll, but didn't want to touch it either. Incredibly traumatized. And so the field worker, a lot of wisdom, put the doll down on the chair near the little girl, and started to do some paperwork. And she noticed suddenly a little hand come out and just start stroking the doll. Before long, the doll was being cuddled and nursed. And unbelievingly, this little girl who hadn't spoken began to speak to the doll in loving terms. Very soon, the child was smiling, happy, and happy to be cuddled and nursed. And sometimes speaking through the doll started to communicate. Person writes, this precious little one has a long journey ahead of her, but has made amazing progress. And writing to mum, she said, I want you to know that we are everlastingly grateful for your love and kindness in creating such miracles that we will never see, that we will never ever forget the amazing gift. It was just a doll. But nothing is insignificant in your life or mine when it's done for the significance of the cause of Christ. When we take even the little things we can do, acts of kindness for others, and become the hands of Jesus, become the voice of Jesus, become the feet of Jesus walking into that situation and just doing the little. He has an amazing way of turning little things into miracles. A disciple of Jesus finds a need, a hurt, and tries to do something about it. And again, the story of the Good Samaritan, it's not about fixing everything, it's about doing something. Jesus put it this way, talking about the little things, the seemingly insignificant things that become enormous through his hands when you're willing to offer your hands. In Mark 9 and verse 41, truly I tell you, anyone who gives you a cup of water in my name, because you belong to the Messiah, will certainly not lose their reward. I want you to notice how accessible Jesus makes it for us to become his hands, his feet, his voice. He says, even if you give a cup of water and you do it in my name, it's touched by eternity. It's touched by my grace, and it changes things. It may not fix everything, but it changes things. It's the little things. We do things in Jesus' name, and they become touched with his grace and touched by eternity. A simple question I've got to ask, having posed the one at the beginning, you're living life looking for loopholes, avoiding walking to the other side. And again, not wanting to put guilt. We can't do everything. Please, it's not about guilt. But do you have a relationship with Jesus would be the most important question. And if you don't, we've read earlier that Jesus didn't come to be served. He said it himself. But he came to serve. And he has the powerful thing. And to give his life as a ransom for many. That includes you, all of us. Locked in sin, alienated from God, Jesus comes and literally builds a bridge of grace for us to cross over and to have a relationship with God. And it's simply done by receiving what he's done. It's not about laws. It's not about religion. It's about receiving grace, the kindness of Jesus into your heart and life, and letting him cleanse you and transform.